Well, it is Tuesday, and that means we are being joined in studio by Lisa Roberson of the Chronicle-Telegram and our local beat with Lisa, brought to you by 9-Round Kickbox Fitness. And it sounds like Halloween for Lisa is one of those days where she would love to go to 9-Round Kickbox Fitness to kickbox some stress out of her system, right?
I don't stress about Halloween.
You're just telling us about Halloween. You're not really a Halloween fan. Why is that?
I am probably the exact opposite of a Halloween fan. If you find a Halloween fan, I am on the other spectrum of what that fan of Halloween is.
There's no
costumes. There's no decorations. There's no passing out candy. It's another day for me.
Do you celebrate November 1st then? Like, are you happy when Halloween is over and done with?
I celebrate it for the half-price candy.
Ooh, that's
okay.
Always a
good
plus.
Call.
That's Very how I celebrate
call.
Valentine's Day. I think my wife would prefer I do it a little more the other way, but there's nothing like getting the half-price box of chocolates and saying, hey, happy Valentine's Day a day late, but we saved money.
You did. You saved a lot of money by doing so. You can save a lot of money doing the Halloween thing right on November 1st. It's all good stuff. So no costumes, no candy. You mentioned your son's going to have a blast tonight, though. He's going to go trick-or-treating. He'll be out there for all 90 minutes, right?
Yes. It's really hard to have a no Halloween mantra when you have two children.
Sure.
So for years, I've had to suck it up and do Halloween. But my son's 11 now, so I don't have to. He can kind of find his own friends and neighbors to do Halloween. So he'll go out and he'll trick-or-treat until he cannot trick-or-treat any longer.
That's a plus. I was telling Bull, I didn't realize this was like a week-long thing now. I've got two kids under two, and I've got to go to these PTO parties, and I've got other things I'm going to. I've worn out that costume, and it's only been on for like a week and a half now.
Hey, to some
it's crazy.
People, it lasts a month.
That's
Lisa was telling me before, she has friends that have basically been setting this thing up and celebrating to some degree for, what, 2 months?
Yes. My friends Sarah and Sarah, they love Halloween. They were married on Halloween.
Wow.
They have decorations in their home. I went to their home in, like, August, and they were starting to put decorations up.
That's crazy.
They said they were contemplating keeping them up all year long.
See?
That's funny, though.
Some people love it. I mean, remember Jeff Hartz was here with the Cleveland Haunt Club?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he mentioned,
obviously, he's a big fan.
He said Halloween's like his Christmas.
Yeah.
And some people just love it, but I digress.
Lots of Halloween tree, he said.
He does have a Halloween tree. That's right. Halloween
tree. My friend Sarah have a Halloween
really?
Tree, too.
I did not know that was a thing, and now we've heard about other people having it.
It's wildly That's growing great. In popularity. There's no question about it.
I knew
that.
They loved Halloween when I went to their spare bathroom, and there was a skeleton in the tub.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy.
Okay.
Well. I'm with you, though, Lisa. I'm not a big Halloween fan. I can do without it, I guess. I get by.
Everyone's got memories, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's got good memories and bad memories of Halloween. Speaking of memories, you guys put a nice little collection of memories together about the last game at Ely Stadium, and everybody, of course, had a different kind of memory. You know, some folks had memories of graduation. Some folks had memories of football games, and it just seemed like last Friday night, it was a nice little collection. People who came back to the game, they really had a nice time, even though they may not have gotten the result that they wanted. But still, it seems when you guys are putting those memories together, that had to be a lot of fun to kind of look back at some of the folks who have been going to Ely Stadium for years and years and years, and all these great memories that came out of all these wonderful experiences. Were there a couple that stood out to you?
You know, I really love talking to the older alumni from the school, because they can remember the school from, you know, when the stadium was in its heyday. And they loved playing there, and they have all these great memories. I love the older guy that we use on the paper, Floyd Lear. He just, his daughter sent in a photo. You know, he's 90 years old. He was born the same year the stadium was built. And he just has all these great memories of going to school in Elyria High School and playing at Elyria Stadium. And he has, you know, he had the T-shirt, the hat. He has a picture hanging on this wall. They just love that place.
And it ought to be a lot of fun for you guys to put together, because I'm sure you heard from all kinds of different people as to what kinds of memories they had. And I think that's the cool thing, too. People who come at different times, like, you know, the kids who are still going to school today, they obviously look at Ely Stadium much differently than some of the folks you just mentioned.
Yes. It was one of those things where we threw it out there, which we always do, to see if we can get some feedback from readers. And sometimes when we do that, we get one or two people, and we think, great, you know, we can put together a little story. But this one had such a tremendous feedback from people. We had dozens of people sending us photos and emails and calling us to tell us about their memories. So I think Ely Stadium just really has a special place in so many people's hearts.
Yeah, certainly a lot of connections there, too. I think that's the cool thing. Like, it's just, it's one of those places you just kind of brought everybody together. And I think the idea is that when they build that new complex, it creates more new memories, right?
More new memories.
Yeah, it's a
I have my own memories of Ely Stadium because my daughter marched in Elyria High School Pioneer Marching Band. So I know I've gone there and seen her march many times. And the last time she marched in that field, it was pretty emotional to me to think that
really?
She wouldn't be there anymore.
Wow. That's cool. It's one of those stadiums, too, that with it not being on the school, I always feel like stadiums like that can sort of get lost. But it was obviously big in the community because I believe Lorain County did the Special Olympics there as well. So, I mean, it was more than just the school's field. It really was absorbed by the entire community here in Elyria, in my opinion.
Yeah, no question about that. Again, we're talking with Lisa Roberson of the Chronicle-Telegram, brought to you by 9-Round 30-Minute Kickbox Fitness. Boy, a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yes.
Thomas Friedman was at LCCC yesterday talking about exponential growth of technology. Had some pretty interesting quotes in your story and some very interesting things to say.
One of the things I found really interesting was the biggest takeaway from his speak about the year of 2007. I don't know if you can remember that year, but it was the year that major software programs were developed. It was the year storage capacity for computers exploded. Facebook and Twitter kind of came on the scene. Change.org emerged. And, you know, you had iPhones and smartphones and iOS technology, and Android technology. So it was kind of like the big boom for technology back in 2007. And so he talked about that. And he also talked about how you would think that with that big boom in 2007, people would have just, like, jumped on board with that and been running with it. But so many communities were left behind because 2008 hit and the recession hit. So a lot of people got left behind by that big boom. And so now you have to play catch up because technology is outpacing human capacity to adapt, and so people have to figure out ways to which they can tie into technology and kind of advance themselves. So it was really interesting to talk.
He talked about any generational gaps there as well, because it feels like some of the older generation has a tougher time adapting to that. And that's interesting because you talk to a lot of folks, and I feel like the baby booming generation is somewhat split. You know, some do a very nice job of adapting. Others have a hard time getting used to this new wave of technology.
Yes. I mean, he talked a little bit about that. He talked about how, you know, this country was built on people who were told what to do, and they were liked being told what to do. They weren't really the innovators. They, you know, you gave them a task, and they did the task. They did the task very well, and that's how this country was built. And so this newer generation, they're more of the innovators, and they want to know kind of like why and how, and they want to figure out a way to do it for themselves. And so he talked about how, you know, in order for you to adapt to the way technology is changing, you have to be willing to be a lifelong learner. And you have to be willing to constantly educate yourself in new industries and new technologies and new thought processes so that you can continue to grow with technology.
You actually kind of sort of went through a similar process about a week ago in Columbus, right?
That's very true.
You're learning how to use the video, right?
Learning how to use the video. I've already made two videos. So
actually, I saw one of those with the VeggieU, right?
Is VeggieU. That
what that's cool.
Nice. What is VeggieU for our listeners who aren't familiar?
VeggieU is based in Oberlin, and it's a nonprofit that aims to get children to have different mindsets around vegetables and produce and where it comes from and how it gets from the farm to their plate. And they work with a number of schools, and they let schools set up small gardens in their classrooms, and they have a 25 lessons that they give the students and the teachers to kind of work through the VeggieU curriculum, and it's tied back to science.
Is it primarily the idea of, like, growing the vegetable, or is it, like, what happens after the vegetable's fully grown, or is it kind of, like, encompass both of those?
A little bit of both of those. It's all growing the vegetables and where the vegetables go from there and how they end up on the plate and how you can keep sustainability in your community.
I thought it was cool, too, watching that video, just watching the kids get behind that, too, because you never know when you get into the mind of a kid how they're going to respond to that. But they seem to love the idea.
No, they did love the idea, because the guy who brought his hydroponic garden with him for a demonstration, it was a very small unit, and they were very surprised that he can grow peppers and tomatoes right in his little small unit. So they said, maybe I want one for my bedroom. I can grow. One girl said carrots because they were crunchy, and another boy said he wanted to grow tomatoes because he loved ketchup. So it was fun, and I liked making the video because it was kind of a new medium for me. I'm really pushing myself towards being a more multimedia reporter and to do a lot more video storytelling.
What did you think about cutting that video up? See, shooting video is cool, but then when you get back to your office and you're like, all right, how much of this do I need to use? How much do I cut out? I felt like that was the hardest part about video.
That is the hardest part about video. I mean, I've taken video. Everyone's taken video with their iPhone or their smartphone before. It's much different from you taking one video and you're going to share with your friend than taking half a dozen different videos and have to splice them together into one video to make one coherent story. So that was a little difficult. Luckily, iMovie is very intuitive, so it allowed me to kind of walk me through the process a little bit, and it was kind of error-proof.
Error-proof. See, I could use some more error-proof in my life. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I
feel like... No, I made two videos, and now I'm already talking about how I need more technology and trying to find different people that I want to talk to about, you know, video storytelling and more equipment that I want the Chronicle to buy me.
See, hopefully Mr. Hudnut and company, they're listening right now, and they know exactly what you need moving forward. Well, I want to finish on this note here. Well, yesterday, Elyria City Council proposed a budget for next year, and it's going to help out the nonprofit organization. How much is it going to help out nonprofit organization? How's it all going to work?
Okay. First, you have to understand how this grant process works. These are called Community Development Block Grants, and these are administered by HUD, and these are probably one of the longest-running grant programs in the country. And they're designed for communities, urban communities, to help them address blight and to help them to address revitalizing the low- and moderate-income communities. And so in Elyria, that's mainly the south side of Elyria, because that's it's a high-poverty concentrated area. And there's some other areas in city, too. And so nonprofits can apply for funds that can help them do their work. So, you know, these are groups like Save Our Children and Elyria YWCA and Adopt a School. They're already working in the community. But, you know, nonprofits have such a shoestring budget that they need ways to get funding and different mechanisms. So this is what the grants step in and do.
Now, there's a cap as far as to how much money the city can spend on nonprofits. Is that correct?
Yes. In this particular grant, they can only use 15% to go towards public service work. And so the nonprofits have a very small pot. So it's about $630,000 that the city will receive for fiscal year 2018, and only about 15% of it, I think it comes out to maybe $95,000, give or take a few thousand dollars, can go towards that public service sector.
Okay, and in 2018, the budget's there for these nonprofits to certainly benefit from all
yes.
of that. Very cool stuff. Well, before we cut you loose, what do we have working for this coming week?
Today I'm working on some of the zoning restrictions that the city is going to be putting in place for the medical marijuana entities, so they can figure out where they want to be in the city and what kind of conditional uses they will be permitted to have there. So that's really interesting. It kind of restricts these entities down to probably only 15% of the area of the city is going to be viable for them. So, you know, there will be no neighborhoods, no residential areas. People won't have them as neighbors.
Interesting stuff. All right. We look forward to reading that as always. Look forward to talking about it next week. Enjoy your night, Lisa. And if you are in Elyria, don't go knocking on Lisa's door tonight. Just let her lay low and have a glass of wine. Watch some TV, right?
And wait for my son to come home.
And wait for your son to come home. Lisa, thanks as always.
Thank you.